This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump faced off last night in the first presidential debate of the season. They butted heads about how to address racial tensions, the future of trade and business policy, and who is more fit to be in the Oval Office. Meanwhile, polls in North Carolina show the presidential and gubernatorial races are very close, while incumbent Senator Richard Burr currently holds a slight advantage over Democratic challenger Deborah Ross. Well, lots of questions, including how will last week's events in Charlotte and the controversial House Bill 2 affect the election. Political science professor and provost at Catawba College, Michael Bitzer, joins us now to talk about the latest political news. Michael, welcome back. Good to talk with you.
Good to talk with you as well.
Talk about that debate last night. A lot of folks were talking about the two candidates' temperament and tone. That's more or less maybe what we look for in these debates. What were your observations?
It really felt like there at the beginning it was a true debate. Both candidates were engaging with each other. They were both kind of going back and forth. The moderator had kind of stepped back and let them go at each other. I thought that ultimately Donald Trump felt like he brought about 30 minutes to a 95-minute debate. By the end, if folks have managed to continue to watch it towards the bitter end, it seemed like he was just kind of flailing around, relying back on his usual tactics. For Secretary Clinton, very sure, very confident in herself. She certainly had the one-liners prepared and was able to deploy them. But I thought at times she kind of missed some opportunities for her to take advantage of what Trump has said. Certainly, I don't think anybody's minds were changed. And for the few folks who are undecideds, I have to think that they probably came out of watching that thinking, I'm not real sure who I'm going to be supporting after this debate.
No, but it is interesting that the polls tend to support your conclusion. If you look at the overnight polls and the question is who won the debate, overwhelmingly Hillary Clinton comes out on top of those polls. And there has been, I mean, Nate Silver pointed out today that historically there's a correlation, at least in the short run, a correlation between those polls and voter sentiment and the overall election poll. Who are you going to vote for?
Yeah, I would agree with that, but I think I would stress the fact that it's a short-lived kind of bounce or any type of opportunity. I think with this year, again, trying to make predictions on what's going to happen this year, I think we've all learned after the past year and a half not to do so. But I think these debates, spread out as they are, will give that momentary blip. But I have to think that we're going to settle back into this kind of coin toss. And the important areas to look at are in the individual states. Don't worry about the national polls. They will reflect the horse race component. I think diving into the state polls, and you'll probably have to give it at least a couple of days to see those come out, really is going to be focused on states like North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida, some of the key battleground states.
Well, let's take a look again at last night's debate. A standout moment in the debate about Hillary Clinton's stamina. Let's listen to this clip, moderator Lester Holt asking Donald Trump about whether Hillary is fit to be in office.
Mr. Trump, this year, Secretary Clinton became the first woman nominated for president by a major party. Earlier this month, you said she doesn't have, quote, a presidential look. She's standing here right now. What did you mean by that?
She doesn't have the look. She doesn't have the stamina. I said she doesn't have the stamina, and I don't believe she does have the stamina. To be president of this country, you need tremendous stamina.
The quote was,
you
I
have,
just don't think she has a presidential
look. Wait a minute, Lester, you asked me a question. Did you ask me a question? You have to be able to negotiate our trade deals. You have to be able to negotiate, that's right, with Japan, with Saudi Arabia. I mean, can you imagine we're defending Saudi Arabia and with all of the money they have, we're defending them and they're not paying? All you have to do is speak to them. Wait, you have so many different things you have to be able to do, and I don't believe that Hillary has the stamina.
Let's let her respond.
Well, as soon as he travels to 112 countries and negotiates a peace deal, a ceasefire, a release of dissidents and opening of new opportunities in nations around the world, or even spends 11 hours testifying in front of a congressional committee, he can talk to me about stamina.
It's a clip from last night's presidential debate. Political scientist Michael Bitzer is with me. What was your reaction to that moment?
I thought that was one of the classic zingers of the evening. We tend to watch these debates and look for those aha moments. Reagan's 1980, there you go again, and George H.W. Bush looking at his watch, and Al Gore with the sighs. You know, we look for the spirited comebacks and retorts. And I thought that was one of the most effective ones by Secretary Clinton that certainly was able to keep things on par. Granted, neither side is going to acknowledge that the other side scored a victory in that one, but I'd have to say, you know, they were both aiming for their respective guns and they were shooting at each other. Whether they felt like they got hit or not is a totally different story, I'm afraid.
Well, it's interesting because there may have been a zinger at the end, but at the beginning of that, again, we catch Trump in a he's dissembling, right? The quote was, look, he won't let him finish because of the quote, and he's going to say, no, I'm now going to change the word right before your very eyes from look, which is on record, to stamina. And that's also embedded in that quote. I thought that was interesting.
It certainly was, and Trump almost seemed to be debating Lester Holt at times last night. You know, and this is kind of the classic pattern that Trump gets into of making a statement and then denying that the statement was ever made. But his supporters are still latched to him. That's the real key thing that I think coming out of these debates and really moving forward towards November 8th is this kind of baked-in sentiment that is so prevalent in the electorate right now. We are dealing with so few undecideds that, you know, we're basically going to be playing this all the way through up to November 8th.
Well, there were a lot of atmospherics last night in 90 minutes, as you said, and perhaps 30 minutes of that had some substance. Maybe one of the more substantial moments was when the two candidates were asked about the economy and taxes. Let's listen.
Back to the question, though, how do you bring back jobs? American manufacturers, how do you make them bring the jobs back?
Well, the first thing you do is don't leave. The companies are leaving. I could name, I mean, there are thousands of them. They're leaving, and they're leaving in bigger numbers than ever. And what you do is you say, fine, you want to go to Mexico or some other country, good luck. We wish you a lot of luck. But if you think you're going to make your air conditioners or your cars or your cookies or whatever you make and bring them into our country without a tax, you're wrong. And once you say you're going to have to tax them coming in, and our politicians never do this because they have special interests, and the special interests want those companies to leave because in many cases they own the companies. So what I'm saying is we can stop them from leaving. We have to stop them from leaving, and that's a big, big factor.
Let me let Secretary Clinton get
well,
there.
Well, let's stop for a second and remember where we were 8 years ago. We had the worst financial crisis, the Great Recession, the worst since the 1930s. That was in large part because of tax policies that slashed taxes on the wealthy, failed to invest in the middle class, took their eyes off of Wall Street, and created a perfect storm. In fact, Donald was one of the people who rooted for the housing crisis. He said back in 2006, gee, I hope it does collapse because then I can go in and buy some and make some money. Well, it did collapse.
That's called business, by the way.
9 million people. 9 million people lost their jobs. 5 million people lost their homes. And $13 trillion in family wealth was wiped out.
Another clip from last night's presidential campaign, or presidential debate, I should say. Political scientist Michael Bitzer is here from Catawba College. Again, what's your analysis of that? There's plenty of information in that, isn't there?
Very much so. And I think the two sides were accurately depicting how they are handling this campaign narrative that they're trying to paint. Secretary Clinton was very much on substance, very much on the details, very much on the numbers. She was presenting the kind of logical argument of what the impact and what the effects were. Donald Trump was more concerned about emotion and more concerned about trying to raise the rhetoric and to really focus on kind of an emotional connection to his voters and his base. So I think both sides are playing towards their strengths. The question is, how will the voters tend to respond in an environment that is very much a depiction of the country's on the wrong track, But we've got some stable economic indicators. We've got a presidential approval rating above 50%. You know, some of the basic fundamentals that we as political scientists look at, it's pretty much a coin toss. And I think the polls are reflecting that.
Yeah, but I also wonder about the political base. You talk about the emotional appeal, which has been a very strong component in Trump's campaign so far. If you're the U.S. Chamber of Commerce or the Republican establishment, you just heard Donald Trump promising to undo 35 years of Reaganomics by imposing tariffs. All the neoliberals had constructed in 30 years, he's about to undo as a Republican. Does that scare them? What does this do to the establishment?
That's the great question. I'm not sure this is anybody's father's Republican Party, let alone Reagan's Republican Party. But I think the anger, the concern, the fear that has really tapped into a core group of voters that are appealing directly to the Trump candidacy does kind of concern Main Street, probably much more establishment kind of Republicans. You know, the concern that I have in North Carolina is what do suburban moderate Republicans tend to do? We know that probably Trump's base of support is in rural areas. Urban areas have trended more and more Democratic. What are suburban Republicans going to do when presented with these two options? And I think that's part of the fascination with this state, is to see how that performs come November.
All right. Well, we will stay tuned, and we'll be back with you, I'm sure, throughout this next few weeks. Michael Bitzer, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Michael Bitzer is provost of Catawba College and a political science professor, and you can link to his blog at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, the annual Carolina Food Festival, first annual, hopes to change food policy by changing the conversation around food. You're listening to the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.